Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America. All chips to B.C. It's Saturday, the 12th of August, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm deaf.
And okay.
5 minutes after the hour.
Welcome to Soundbites.
Welcome to Soundbites. I'm exuberant. And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing. Sorry. And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose.
Loud or soft, just be consistent. Run the level.
Get off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. The author of An Influential Guide to Computer Passwords says he now regrets several of the tips he gave. Bill Burr, who I think was the guy who invented Kukul, Fran, and Ollie. That's a different Bill Burr. Had advised users to change their password every 90 days and to muddle up words by adding capital letters, numbers, and symbols. So, for example, protected might become PR0T3CT. You get the idea. The problem, he believes, is that the theory came unstuck in practice. Well, duh. Mr. Burr now acknowledges that his 2003 manual was barking up the wrong tree. He disclosed his views in an interview with the Wall Street Journal. Current guidelines no longer suggest passwords should be frequently changed because people tend to respond by making only small alterations to their existing password. For example, changing monkey 1 into monkey 2, which are relatively easy to deduce, or adding the year or the month. I knew a guy at a place I used to work whose password was always like June 83, July 83.
I knew one, or heard about one on a security podcast, complaining the company made him change the password every 90 days and he couldn't use any of the last five. So he just changed it six times and made it the same one again.
Yep. Furthermore, it has been demonstrated that it takes longer for computers to crack a random mix of words, such as pig, coffee, wandered, black, than it does for them to guess a word with easy to remember substitutions, such as BR0KEN or 3N ampersand, whatever. Mr. Burr's original advice was distributed by the United States government's National Institute of Standards and Technology. It has since been amended several times, with the most recent edition being released this June, this last June. Anything published under the NIST banner tends to be influential, so these guidelines have had a long-lasting impact. But we've known for some considerable time that these guidelines actually had a rather unfortunate effect. For example, the more often you ask someone to change their password, the weaker the passwords they typically choose. And as we all, as we have all now so many online accounts, the situation is compounded, so it encourages behaviors such as password reuse across systems. Britain's National Cybersecurity Center issued its own guidance on the matter in 2015. It recommended that organizations abandon a policy of pushing their users into regular password resets and that they should support the use of password managers, programs that securely store hundreds of different logons, avoiding the need to memorize each one. It's good that password advice is now being updated to be based on evidence, but there is still traditional advice in other areas of computer security being perpetrated despite us knowing it won't work. We need research to tell us what security advice will actually improve the situation, said a university researcher. There's a surprise. And for the government and companies to pay attention to the results. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Password Guru Regrets Past Advice. Your choices are, that idiot's caused me a lot of grief, my password is quite long, I know my passwords are weak, and, of course, happy 34 monkey! Exclamation point. There we go. So far, we've got 24 of you have answered the poll. More than half of you have said happy 34 monkey, of course. But we know you'll have more to say, so if you scroll down on the right, under Fascinating Stuff, the first choice there Is the forums the second forum down? Is the poll discussion, and so far at least, the first poll discussion is Password Guru Regrets Past Advice. There are three people who have posted so far. We'd love to have you join us there. And, of course, you can join us here. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, and what's interesting, in several of the articles, they actually cited the XKCD cartoon that talked about that. You know, four random words that you can probably remember is much safer than, you know, 10 random characters that you can't remember and will write down and post it to the computer.
See, I thought you were going to sit there. I was a little disappointed, Nick, when you sat there and put happy 34 monkey. And I thought you'd say baby.
I should have. That was Burr Tilstrom was Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. That's right. Who was the one who did,
there's a comedian from Breaking Bad called Bill Burr.
No, the one who did the other puppet, the puppets, maybe it was Burr Tilstrom too. Okay. It's Burr
Kukla,
Tilstrom.
Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
But at any rate, well, I'm old, so I would get
same
there.
Here.
Yeah, it's black and white.
Mm-hmm.
It's my daughter. And I used to sit down to a movie, she'd say, what's it? Oh, it's black and white.
Well, now they've been colorized.
Can't be any good if it's in black and white.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, we have found that over the years, well, you've all experienced it. We get somebody a brand new machine, we help them set it up, we get everything all ready, and then we say, put in a password. And their eyes glaze over and they start to sweat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They cannot think of a password.
Because they're so worried that they'll forget it.
That's the point behind password managers. Whether you use any of the online ones like LastPass or any of the local ones like NPass or, you know, whatever you use is it's important to have somewhere to save those passwords because you'll be more likely to use a big password, a long password. That's why I tell people, if your password is a movie quote or a poem line or a music, a song lyric, but not the one you're most known for, right? Not the one you sing all the time or whatever. But if there's one you might know, I think that I shall never see. That's a fairly long password.
But it's a fairly popular or a well-known
quote.
But
that's why I wouldn't use that one, right? Yeah. Right. So, but you know, a poem thing or a song lyric. Like, I have often walked down the street before. None of you know that, but that's it is.
For a while.
Well, this is Jazz 90.1, so some of them will know.
Yeah, it might be.
The ones who listen to Kim Corcoran's Broadway thing on Sunday.
On the Have I Been Pwned site, they're up to 4 billion pwned accounts.
Right.
And so that's where a lot of the password analysis has come from. And when sites require a capital letter, it's almost always the first letter. When sites require a number, it's almost always a 1 at the end of the number, or it's the current year. And so people that used to be difficult passwords, there was one I remember reading, QAZXSWEDC. Well, that sounds like a pretty random password, doesn't it?
It does.
That's the letters on your keyboard, up, down, up, down.
Oh, yeah.
So that's not very random. And somebody found a popular password, There Is No Fate But What We Make, which is Sarah Connor's quote from the first Terminator movie. And, well, that's you know, you'd think that would be a long, good password, but no, it's a famous quote.
It's a famous quote. It's like, trust no one.
Yeah. So the bad guys will feed dictionaries, called a dictionary attack. They feed every word in the dictionary into the password. And then they throw in Rosacea Thesaurus and Bartlett's quotes. And then
There's a hack called Rainbow Tables, and I think they're up to 24 characters now. And so they can break any Windows password in seconds if it's less than whatever the length is. And I think, I knew they were up to 17, but I don't know, 24 is a number in my head, but I don't necessarily know that's true anymore. But there's a lot of that stuff that's going on, and a lot of people are trying to break passwords now. And you know, most of the people I know say, well, they don't want me. I'm safe. No, you're not. You have a bank account, don't you?
Or you have a computer they can use to attack somebody else.
Right. You have a credit card. They're in for anything they can get. It costs them almost nothing to break into your computer. So if they get $10, they made money. And it's all about volume. You know, yep. Thousands of little hits are as good as a big hit.
Death by a million paper cuts.
Right. Right. So these people need to understand.
Take a little more due diligence in your passwords. And, you know, I understand, you know, it can be frustrating because folks have to, well, I've got to have so many different passwords and I can't remember them all. Use a password manager then.
Right.
You know, they've got the tools there. It's just whether you're too lazy to use them or not.
And on Apple devices, there's a password manager built in called the Keychain.
Right.
And the third-party ones are there, too. But
there's plenty of them out there, but people are just too lazy to use them.
And you probably are using it and don't realize it. Because when you go to save a password, it says, would you like to remember this password?
Yeah. And you say yes, and guess what?
It's in the Keychain now.
It's in the Keychain. We all need to be more diligent about that, and we all need to stop repeating passwords. Never use the same password twice, because if one of them gets broken, now the others are all broken.
And it's never you that loses it. It's the other end.
Right.
We just mentioned this, 4 billion leaked accounts from Target, Home Depot, Yahoo, etc. And if you use the same password there that you used on, say, Amazon or Citibank or PayPal...
They got you.
They've got you.
Yep.
All right, to the phones. Our first to the phones, Robin. Atomic batteries to power, turbines to speed. It's Ron from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ron?
Good afternoon, guys.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm running Windows 7, and I'm running Thunderbird.
Yeah.
I like Thunderbird. The problem is when I go to write an email, it opens up to a wide window in the right area, okay, to write the email.
Yeah.
At the top, I'd lost the file edit view and help and tools.
Full screen.
I cannot seem to retrieve it. I was wondering if I have to download a new version or would I lose all of my current email. It used to be on the left-hand side.
You've accidentally gone into full screen mode.
Yep.
So we need to find the key to
take it out of full screen mode. There's a key sequence that you can get out of full screen mode where your toolbar and all that will come back up to the top.
Right,
I can't seem to get out of it now.
Hold on a minute. Hold on.
You can go into the preference files, but there's got to be a key that does it too.
There's got to be a key that does it. It's supposed to be F11.
F11?
Yeah. So theoretically, if you hit F11, it'll all come back for you.
Oh, really?
Theoretically.
Yeah, if you've got that window activated, hit the F11.
Well, now hold on.
Maybe function F11 if you're on a laptop.
Right. Although, hold on a second. When you go into this full screen to answer your email, if you do an Alt-Tab, does Thunderbird come up again?
Right.
It does.
Right. Right. Everything in Thunderbird is working. It's just like on a wide screen when I go to write an email. I lose all the email addresses from the left side. It's like everything is moved off to the right. The whole screen is moved to the right.
Okay, so what may have happened? There's one of two things that happened. Either you're in full screen mode and F11 will take you out of it. Or if you, as Steve said, if you're on a laptop, it might be function F11.
It's a desktop.
Or you simply, one of the things that you can do in Thunderbird is to say, I want mails that I read or write to come up in a separate window. And then the way you set that window, Thunderbird will remember. So you may have made it too large at some point, and Thunderbird is simply remembering that.
Okay.
So if you can see in the upper left-hand corner those three little buttons that say, you know, minimize it, make it smaller, or close it.
Right. I tried minimizing it, and it just minimizes the width screen. It doesn't do anything.
Have you tried making it smaller?
Yeah, drag and edge.
Hold on. The middle button that makes it smaller or bigger. Does that do anything?
Okay. How do I...
Did you try that?
No, I didn't try
that. Okay, so try that. If that doesn't work, then what you want to do is grab the top of the screen near but not on those buttons and then drag them down and to the left, and you should see the edge of the screen.
From the left to right.
Either, well, left. You want to go left, down and left, because you're already in the upper right-hand corner, right?
Okay.
And then you should see the edge of that window, and then you should be able to grab that window and make it smaller, both from the top down and from the right in toward the left, and then move it around on your screen again and keep making it smaller until it's the size you want it to be.
Okay.
And I realize that's a little bit of a pain in the neck, but if it solves the problem, you know, your choice is live with it or solve it.
Yeah, okay, I'll try that. Is there a way to update the Thunderbird, or is that done automatically?
That's done automatically, and this has nothing to do with the update.
Okay.
Okay, we got to take a break.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, let me just once again explain to people that they may get an error, a warning, rather, when they go to the Security Tango. It appears that Google and I are having a misunderstanding, or contretemps, perhaps, about what it is that the Security Tango does. And we're working to resolve that, but until then, they're on Chrome specifically, and I think also on Firefox
and Safari.
Oh, and Safari, they blacklisted it. So we're working on that. It is not the easiest thing in the world to get off their list, but we'll see. And now to the phones. Our next caller is Robert from Rochester, New York. Hi, Robert. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Bob Borman. I think you and I were working at Chase Bank at the same time.
Yes, we will. We were.
Yep. Okay. What I'm calling about is my wife has a 8.1 computer, 64-base system, and she's had it since September of 2014.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, in the 16th, the security patches for it starting in July failed.
Yep.
And same thing for August.
Yep. And they will continue to do so forever because Windows 8.1 is pretty well.
It's been dead for a while.
8.1 actually is supposed to go until January 2018. So theoretically, you should still be getting updates. What error do you get?
It just says it failed. Occasionally, I get something. I just got something today that says. I restarted the system just because it was slow, and it said, keep your PC on until this is done, installing update 1 of 1, and it did that, and after an hour, I gave up on it.
Yeah. This is hard. Okay, here's the deal. What it sounds like is there's an issue somewhere in your registry. That's generally a problem.
So maybe download the update manually and install
it? Well, yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. And this is just the last 2 months, yeah?
That's correct. And I've tried it repeatedly. I mean, I get some things. For example, monthly quality, that failed. Successful security update, that's Adobe Flash. So some things work. Security updates for Silverlight succeeded. But anything that are the monthly security, monthly quality roll-up, failed for the last 2 months.
Yeah, what you might want to try the first thing you want to do, there's a built-in thing called the Deployment Image Servicing and Management Tool, DISM.exe.
Okay, wait, Deployment?
just what was DI, name again? Deployment, Image, Servicing, and Management.
Okay.
DISM, right? And it will list the packages that are on your system. And what will happen is you'll see the list of successfully installed packages. And so you can match that against the list that came down and said what didn't install.
Okay.
So you've got the ones that didn't install or are partially installed. And you can try uninstalling that partial installation or whatever. So
the one that didn't work.
What?
The one that didn't work.
The one that didn't work. Right. And then once you've done that, you do a remove package, then you do a cleanup image, and then you should be able to restart. Now, let me warn you two things. Steve's got a way to do that from Microsoft, and it is not easy.
Now, this article is intended for support agents and IT professionals.
Right. It is not easy, yeah. And it is dangerous.
If you type something wrong.
So what might be best is to take it to someone and explain to them the problem.
Okay. Now, is there anyone in Rochester that you can recommend? We did go to Staples.
Good. I mean, they're nice people, and they can sell you a computer, but they're not really a tech support place.
Is there someone around that you can recommend?
There's a number of really good places in town. Jesse Group and PC, Enright PC, and Lightspeed. And if I start naming them, the problem is I'm going to leave somebody out, and they're going to get angry with us. The ones that are still around are still very, very good. So if you were to either check the Yellow Pages, I remember the Yellow Pages, or to just go online and say Computer Stores Rochester, New York, and then check their reviews, you'll come up with a couple of really, really good ones.
Yeah. Can you give me a couple?
No, like I just said.
Okay.
Like I just said, if I start naming them, and I did start to name them, and I realized I'm going to forget somebody good, and they're going to get angry with me, so I'm not going to name anybody. You'll want to just look up the local people. If you just type in computer repair near Rochester or in Rochester or
Google,
near me,
it'll come up.
They'll all come up, and there's a half a dozen of them up there right now, and a lot of them are well known. And you check their ratings. Some have 3 stars, some have 4 stars, some have 5 stars, and you get to pick what you like.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but I cannot. I don't want to get in that space anymore.
I appreciate your assistance.
No, my pleasure. Good luck with that. It's tough when that happens to a system, and particularly when it's Windows 8.1 because it's so close to going out of warranty. So get that done real soon, because you're gonna find the people are gonna find it a little less difficult, less easy rather, to fix in a few months.
Of course, the easiest fix is to buy a new computer.
Right.
It's not the cheapest fix, but that's the easiest.
Right, it's not the cheapest fix. But if you're gonna keep using Windows 8.1, first get it repaired soon, and be aware that it goes off mainstream support in January.
That's all trouble. I mean, it's like patching band-aids on a very leaky pipe. Because that's all you're going to do is keep moving. You're going to do a patch for this, and it's going to open another leak somewhere else.
Right.
On an operating system that isn't... Yeah, they say it's supported, but you know what? It's so minimal. It's not worth their effort to put that much into it. It's an old and dead system. I mean, Windows 7, overtook Windows 8. And, they wound up taking 8 off the shelf because 7 was far more superior. And, right. It's just a matter of a fact
let me forestall all the people who are going to call in and say, I went to the Microsoft support site and they said it isn't done until January 10th of 2023.
Yeah,
well, that's extended support, which means two things. One, after January 9th, 2018, you will only get the severe security fixes. And two, you get more support if you're paying for it. So if you are indeed paying Microsoft for extended support for Windows 8.1,
and it's going to cost
you're
you
good till 2023. If not, you ain't. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Hi, Gary. What's up?
Hi, guys. I've got a little trouble burning CDs for a friend of mine. I'm burning, first of all, I'm burning MP3. It works in her boombox. And then when she plays it in her car, which is a 2016, it doesn't play in the car. Now, I've got some options here when I'm burning. I'm using A Shampoo 18.
Okay.
First one is Create Audio CD. Next one is Create MP3 or WMA disc. And then there's another one that says Create Audio Media for Car Hi-Fi or Create MP3 stick.
Right.
So I don't know what I'm doing wrong, why it's not working in our car.
Well, which one have you tried?
I've tried the both the Create Audio CD and the Create MP3 or WMA.
Well, you probably need the MP3 and not the WMA. See, yeah. Here's the deal. There are multiple different types of audio formats.
And the audio CD should do a plain AIF audio disc.
But he said he's not doing that. He's trying to make MP3s.
Yeah.
I suspect, yes, that it would work if you just made an audio disc.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, a 2016, but you want to check the manual. 2016 should read MP3s, WMAs, and about... I have a 2009, and it reads all that stuff.
All right.
But check the manual to make sure it does indeed do that.
And what bit rates? So it may be able to read an MP3 128K, but not a 256K.
So that should bring that down and then maybe burn it slower?
Burn it slower. That was another trick I was going to mention.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, so, and make sure you close it.
An audio disc is 1X. That's where the X came from. It takes 74 minutes to burn a disc.
right. And then the other thing is to make sure that you indeed close that CD.
Okay. And the bit rate you would suggest is what?
Well, the bit rate he suggested is 128. But you really, really want to look at the manual of her car.
Okay.
Because she may only take 64.
And there may be a separate manual for the audio system.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Right, but that's the place to look first, because clearly whatever her boombox is handling it fine.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, why isn't the car? And the answer to that is going to probably be in the manual.
Okay, good.
They'll give you some ideas. Well, at least mine does. Gives you some ideas of how to burn an MP3 type disc.
Okay, all right, good. Thank you, guys.
Yep, good luck. Bye.
And that's one of the biggest advantages of an MP3 disc. An audio disc can hold 74 minutes of audio. With an MP3 disc, you generally get about a 10-to-1 compression, so you can put 700 minutes of audio on an MP3 disc.
And didn't he say one of his options was to select the car?
He said he tried that.
Audio
he tried
for
both.
Car.
He tried both of those, but I would suggest if he didn't try that.
I didn't hear him say that he tried the one with the car. He tried two others, but he didn't hear the one for the car.
Well, I'm sure he should try that if he did not. He should try that if he did not.
I don't know how it would be any different, but who knows?
Right, who knows? One of the other issues is...
MP3 is dead now.
Because
the patent expired and Fryhofer doesn't have to get paid anymore.
Right, so he's telling people it's a dead format.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's why there's
they're telling people
millions
it's a dead
of MP3 files out there.
Right. Here's the other thing is the folder names.
Yeah.
It is possible that if you have put spaces in the folder names or made them longer than, say, 12 characters or 16 characters.
I would say 8.3.
Well, 8.3 is likely to be. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So the other reason to look in the manual is to see how long the folder names have to be. Because if he's put all that music in folder, I had that problem with an older car I had. Not, and this is 2009. It's not a new car. But the car I had before that. It had to have 8.3 as the file name, or at least 8. I mean, you need the .3, but you had to have the 8. because otherwise it would skip it. It would just ignore it. And so I had lots of music that I couldn't play.
Well, see, that's where if you're going to do a music CD, it's throw it. You know, if it's for throw it out on the main part of the disc.
Well, but if you
then you'll get 10 or 12 songs on an audio CD,
right? But if you're going to put it on a CD, an MP3 CD, I like to be able to put, you know, a dozen different albums on a thing. But I like to segregate them by the album. So that's why you need folder names. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Two important announcements. One, today is indeed the Perseid meteor shower. It will, of course, be raining tonight in Rochester, so we won't see doodly squat. That's what you get for living in Rochester during any sort of astrological event, or astronomical event, excuse me. And, of course, on this date, in 1981, IBM introduced the IBM PC. Model 5150 introduced out of Boca Raton, Florida, Rat's Mouth, Florida, for the world to marvel at.
With their, and it's something that would never catch on.
Whoops. With their Charlie Chaplin-like...
Charlie Chaplin guy. I actually have the button. I meant to wear it and forgot to wear it. I still have the button that they gave out when they introduced the PC.
Oh.
And it's got the pretty much that picture. It's the IBM PC with the 12-inch... green screen monitor and the little Rose and Charlie Chaplin, the Charlie Chaplin look-alike posed on top of it. It's very cute. And it's the beginning of the IBM PC. It was very cool. It was a very cool thing. And of course, we poo-pooed it a little bit, those of us who were selling Apples and those of us who were selling a whole lot of CPM systems. I mean, just a whole lot of CPM systems. And we thought, well, that's nice, but it's really underpowered. But as I said at the time, although you will pay easily about $200 a letter for those three little letters on the front, more than it's worth.
Yeah.
The fact is, it has those three little letters on the front.
Yep. No one ever got fired for buying IBM.
That's exactly right. And I have to tell you, I sold a metric bucket load of them. They sold, and not just me, everybody at the shop.
Oh, Kodak. Yeah. Well, Kodak. Well, I mean, you know, we had all the, you know, 286s come in and that. And,
yep.
You know,
even the original 8088s, everybody bought them.
Yeah, it was the marketing arm. You've already got an IBM mainframe in your basement. Why not buy some PCs on your desktop?
Yeah.
And, right.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, and they'd come with, you know, the dual 5.25 floppies. And it pushed the old trash 80s out that used to use the 8-inch floppies. Because that's what I first started on, was a trash 80 and programming in BASIC there.
Right, but the original 5150... it was anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000, and that's in 1981 dollars, by the way, when money actually meant something. And it had it could go up to a whopping 64K of RAM. It was entirely self-contained. It had a 4.77 megahertz 8088 processor, 8-bit processor. It went up to 640K max. It was... And we could not keep them in stock.
And I can remember, because at Kodak, that's when I started working on the 5051s, or the 5150s, and putting in 5 meg hard cards.
Yep. Yep, and then they went up to a whopping 10 meg hard card.
But they were folks were just glad with 5 meg at first because this way they didn't have to load all their Lotus 1-2-3 spreadsheet programs onto their first and then put in their disk. They could have it running on there and then click on it and it automatically
came up. You
could
put every program there was on that hard drive?
Yes, you could. every business program.
Yep. Yeah, really.
And half the games, exactly right. I remember when we put them in at the bank. Bob Boehner was there at the bank at the time. And the programmers hated them. You know, they would submit a program, and then they'd have to wait for it to come back after being punched and run overnight and blah, 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 blah. And that would take, honestly, a day, maybe 2 days. But, you know, we used to say they'd come in on Monday and program. They'd come in on Friday and look at their work.
Yeah.
But now they could get instant results, instant. And they hated it.
And that's if they didn't punch any of the cards wrong.
Right. The 5150 was a revelation to the business world.
Mm-hmm.
For Apple IIs and Apple IIIs with a VisiCalc on them. The guy who wrote VisiCalc, whose name just skips past me right now, made a downloadable version for Windows. It was very cute. I can't
remember
think of his
old
name.
What
was
D-Base? His name?
Something. Oh yeah, I remember D-Base. I like D-Base.
Oh, that was one of the products.
I sold more businesses VisiCalc and then Lotus 1-2-3 and D-Base.
Dan Bricklin.
Dan Bricklin. Then anything else. It was people would come in and I would just have to show them VisiCalc and then Lotus 1-2-3 and then D-Base and it was a sale. You know, you didn't you didn't have to do anything else.
Yep. As long as you could do those main ones.
Yep.
Yeah, you were set.
You didn't even have to say, and they say, well, how much memory do I need? Oh, of course they needed a full 640K. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And what do I need in the way of you need the 10 meg hard card. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care. As long as they could, once they saw those two programs
and
they could do with them in their business, they were done.
And here's one other thing, though, folks, you have to remember. Back when those came out, the 5150s, there were no mice. There was not a mouse. It was a monochrome monitor.
The mouse was still in the lab.
And
that's right.
Yeah, you had to do everything via the keyboard.
That's right. And people loved it.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You remember any of the Lotus 1-2-3 commands? The one-letter commands you would string together to make a macro?
Oh, yes. I'll tell you a story before we go to the phones. I'll tell you a quick story. I was working at the bank, and some guy came into my office. He was real belligerent. And he said, I understand you're the 1-2-3, the Lotus 1-2-3 guru. I said, well, I know a little bit about it. He says, well, my macro won't run. Okay. Why not? And he grabs this sheet of, and it was fanfold paper, and he threw it down on the desk I had in my office, which was a 6-foot desk, and it fell off of each end. That's how long this thing was. As the paper settled to the floor, I happened to look down at a command I knew very well and realized it didn't have a semicolon after it, which it needed. So even before the paper hit the table, I said, well, you didn't put a semicolon after that command. That's your problem. And I left the room.
Cool.
An hour later, he calls me back. He says, how the did you figure that out less that fast? I said, I'm the guru, remember?
Yeah.
He never bothered me again. Okay, to the phones. Our first pure luck, pure unadulterated luck. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester. Our next caller. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. And I do remember those days.
Oh, yes, indeed.
I have a problem. Lately, in the last 2 weeks, I've been getting a little pop-up in the right-hand corner of my Mac. It's a little Chrome notification from a website. And it's a website that I don't know where it came from, don't want it. And so I went through the privacy and everything, and I tried blocking it. And when I go into Google Privacy and Security, it shows up that it should be blocked, but 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times a day, I get these little notifications of the latest story from this website. I hate it.
At some point, some website figured out they could tie into your computer's notification center. So I see this when I go to CNN or you know, some of the other news sites. Do you want to get notifications? And, oh, yeah, sure. And then immediately regret it. On the Mac, you have to go to the notification panel in System Preferences to turn off...
Oh, in Systems Preferences.
Yep, to turn off website notification. And let me see if I can find the link for it. There's in System Preferences under Notifications, it will show you everything that you've allowed to send notifications to.
Okay.
And so I see on mine I have two different ones for Chrome websites. So then, that's not where
Choose one now.
Yeah.
Do not allow.
Yeah, if Google 360 wanted to send him, or Gadgets 360. Let me rephrase. So yeah, notifications is where you tell it where they are, but actually removing them is somewhere else.
Click the hamburger icon in the upper. Which new version?
Which web browser are you using?
Google Chrome, you're latest version, Chrome, okay. Whatever number that is.
Right. So in the upper right, there's those three little dots.
Mm-hmm.
That's the menu. Select settings from that.
Right.
Then show advanced settings.
Uh-huh.
Then under privacy,
right.
Click content settings.
Right.
Scroll down to notifications.
Right.
And just select do not allow any site to show desktop notifications.
You can also type notifications in the settings search window on that first setting page.
Right. Okay. Also, you can, if you would prefer to have some actually show you notifications, you can instead click ask when a site wants to show desktop notifications,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll start asking again. And of course, you can also manage exceptions, where you can click the X to stop a site from sending notifications, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so now this is on Google Chrome itself. Now, I believe just a moment ago, Steve mentioned something about Systems Pref and Mac.
Yeah, the System Preferences works with the Safari notifications.
I don't believe it shows Chrome notifications.
Right. So the Chrome ones are as I said. Now,
mm-hmm.
that will stop anything coming through from that way. But, of course, if you've got an extension that's sending notifications or an app that's sending notifications, those will still come through.
Now, what is an extension?
An extension is an add-on to Chrome. If you go to that three-dot menu,
uh-huh.
And you go under More Tools,
yeah.
One of the choices is Extensions.
It extends the functionality by adding a new feature.
Right. So, for example, I use one called Calendar and Countdown, which puts a calendar up in my address bar next to the address bar. There's bunches of them. They do everything you can imagine.
I've got one to add to my Amazon wish list, and that's a dangerous button.
That's a very dangerous button. Well, if it's only going to the wish list, it's not
yeah,
so
not
bad.
The cart. But then when you have to scroll your wish list, how many pages?
Yeah, right. And then I have another one that does the weather and things like that. So they're just ways to extend the functionality, as Steve said.
Okay, so I've typically stayed away from that because I didn't really know what it did.
Right.
So I may just look at it just to enlighten myself, but right. The three buttons... Settings, advanced, privacy, content.
Yeah.
And the next thing after that is privacy, right?
Notifications.
Notification, okay.
And then your choices are do not allow or ask. So either of those. And, of course, you can also manage exceptions. And that shows you the list you've granted permission to, and you can take anything out of there if you don't want them.
Okay. I thought I had done that, but I may have not done everything that you have just listed, so I'm going to go do it now.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Have a good day.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Yeah, every place I go to is asking for those now.
He may have stopped adding new notifications, but the ones that are already there,
right.
You have to remove.
Right. Every place is asking now. Every single stinking rat bag place. I go to ask if it can send me notifications, and they say no. And then sometimes when I go back, it asks again. I said no.
Because you might have changed your mind.
I did not change my mind.
And there's no don't ask me again button.
There's no don't ask me. No, that would make life easy. But at least as long as you don't actually accidentally click allow, you should be all right. Just you're annoyed, but it's all right. I haven't seen an extension yet. And there probably is one. I just haven't seen an extension yet that will prevent even that from happening or automatically answer don't allow. But we need the curmudgeon extension.
Yeah.
No, safe, don't want it.
Safe. Is there a way to turn safe mode on all the time?
Yeah, right.
So it turns nothing on?
Right.
No extensions, no add-ons, no anything.
I think that's a incognito mode, I think.
Yeah, probably.
I don't
know. Stealth mode.
It is. All my extensions are not on now. So, yeah. So it would turn off the extension that prevents that from happening if there was one. So that's not good. But, yeah. Most browsers nowadays have a privacy mode or an incognito mode or whatever they call it. On Google Chrome, it's Control-Shift-N for a new window. Control-N is a new window, but Control-Shift-N is an incognito window, which means it doesn't save on your machine any of the information of where you went to.
Cookies and history.
Yeah. And cookies and history and all that stuff. However, it doesn't protect you from the other end at all. So don't get the idea that incognito mode makes you invisible on the internet, because that is not what happens. All right, that music tells me that that we've all together wasted an hour of our lives with this nonsense. But I'm game for another hour. How about you? So let's take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. And we will be bringing you a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's exactly right. And I know you're shocked. I hope you're sitting down. And if you're driving, slow down a little, as I'm about to say. This is Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're leisurely sauntering headlong into the second hour of Soundbites.
Very slowly
I turn, step by step, inch by inch. All right, we could do another 59 minutes of Three Stooges,
or
we could go to the phones and talk to Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Niagara Falls.
Slowly I turned.
Dick, you are the guru.
Thank you.
Okay, you may not want to be appointed it, but you are the guru.
Oh, thank you, I think.
You know what guru means. I read the manual.
Yeah, right.
Manual? What's a manual?
Yeah.
Right.
I can't drive a manual.
To remind people that they should take advantage, and I really took advantage of it very late, of Google Play Music, and get your music uploaded for free, because it is awesome.
Yep.
And just like Google Photos is. I'll tell you, if you have a device that you really don't want to spend money to put extra storage in, and you want your music on the device, you know, if you've got enough network data, it's great. It's really cool to have everything you want on there.
Yep. For those of you who have not played with Google Music, music.google.com is where you go to see it. And what happens is you can you have to have a Google ID, of course, and I'm pretty sure most people do. And once you do, you can upload your music to the cloud and play it anytime you want to from any device that can connect to the web. And you also, if you're a member, if you pay, I think it's $10 a month, you can play dang near anything they have ever had. And there are a lot of free stations as well. So you can play them on your phone or on your tablet or on your desktop or your laptop. You can also play them on your Google Home. So the other day I was sitting at home and I said, you know, hey, Google, play classical music. And it did. And I've played jazz and I've played pop and I've played everything on it. And it's kind of amazing. The other day I was sitting there in my chair. And of course, one of the issues is it is completely hands-free. So I had the cat. I had 20 pounds of cat in my arms, not in my lap. He gets up somehow in my arms and just stays there. So I said, hey, Google, play music my cat would like. And it found a jazz station and played that. I don't know what that was about, but there it was. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. What's your favorite part of it, Mark?
Well, my favorite part is, not my favorite part, but it is my favorite part because I went to use it because I had it found local music on my device, obviously.
Right.
And then it won't let you cast it to your Chromecast unless you've uploaded the music to the server.
Right.
So I said, I want to be able to cast all this, you know?
Right.
So I uploaded it. And unfortunately, my upload speed's a little slow, and I've got, 32 gigs of music.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it took a day and a half.
Yep.
But anyways, I wanted to cast it and I wanted to be able to do it easily. And then I said, I went over to, God forbid, you got an iPod. And I went to the iPod Touch and I went to the App Store and they have the Google Play app there. So I could use the iPod, too, to access my music because it's only 32 gigs, and with everything that's on it, I couldn't put all my music on it.
Right.
Because, you know, you'd only have, like, 27 to begin with.
Right, right, right.
And then I have some apps on there that I run, of course, so, you know, you're very limited. So I was able to access music that's not on there also, and I love being able to cast it. That's awesome.
Yeah, I use it extensively. In fact, I have well over 4,500 songs up there right now, and it tells you I've got 4,500 songs in 89 genres, 664 albums, 594 artists. So it tells you. I mean, it lets you put up anything you want because it assumes you own the music. And as long as you own the music, because you had to upload it, so you got it from somewhere, and theoretically at least, that's
unlike,
how that
unlike
works.
Unlike some other companies, they don't assume you're a thief.
Right, right, right.
And I love the fact that I don't have to add any more storage to my Chromebook either, because I can just access it through the Wi-Fi, because I only can use my Chromebook with the Wi-Fi.
Right. That's
so
exactly
that's
right.
Another great aspect of it. Also, I found somebody who made a desktop app for a Windows computer that'll do the same thing. You can access your Google account. So I found that kind of oddly, but I did. And I can cast from that also, from the computer.
Very, very nice.
So, just wanted to remind people it's a really neat way to be able to access your music without actually having to store it on your device.
That's terrific. Thanks.
So, yep.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Thanks, Gary. Mark, you too. We have a lot of ways that we can access our music. Yeah. And, you know, people who are living in the Apple ecosystem use iTunes. People who are living in the Google system may have felt that they were missing out on something, but using Google Music, music.google.com, you can upload all of your music listen to a bunch of other stuff. Also, you know, some of it is free and some of it you would pay for if you wanted to do that, but it gives you an amazing range of music to listen to, and as Mark said, you can play it on any device you own, as long as you sign into Google. with it and cast it wherever you want and do whatever you want.
Yeah, Amazon has their music service too.
Right.
What gets a little annoying is that each company's hardware box only mostly works well with their own music service.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have an Amazon Echo, it won't play Google music. It only plays Amazon music,
right,
and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You can change.
It's proprietary.
You can control that with like your phone and send the music from Google Play on your phone to your Amazon.
Right.
It doesn't work exactly.
I have both an Amazon Dot and a Google Home, and I have to say that I have done some extensive research on not paying for extras on either one. Let's just put it that way.
There you go.
I've done extensive research on not paying for extras.
You did your homework.
I did my homework. And I can do a lot more free stuff on Google Home than I can on Amazon. On the other hand, the Amazon Echo is $49 and the Google Home is $350. So,
yeah.
Right. But the Amazon Dot, not the Echo. The Echo is priced very much like the Home, but the Amazon Dot is cheaper. And of course, you don't even need a Google Home because you can do the same sorts of things. You can just say,
right off your watch.
Okay, and then follow it with the word Google and on any, you know, once you go to
an Android phone
or on your desktop. Mm-hmm. If you've got a microphone and you're signed into Google, you can click that little icon, the little microphone mm-hmm. icon in the search box at Google Home and speak your question. And your question could be play such and so or do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And it will do it. It's pretty cool. In fact, I'm going to try that right now. Okay, Google, play. I see it's already. I outdid myself.
And you may have triggered everyone's device at home.
I probably did.
Yeah, all the podcasts I listen to, they always talk about that we can't say any of the keywords. Because everyone who's listening to this podcast will key, and we don't want to have to make our production staff bleep it out every time.
Right. All right.
I am not going to bleep that out when I do the recording.
Right. I'm gonna hold on a minute. I'm gonna turn off my mic and see if I can get my Google to talk to me here. Hold on a second. Play classical jazz. Oh, I see. It's
doing a search.
It did a search. I did. I'm in this. Okay, so it doesn't do that. Well, that's interesting. Well, I thought it did that.
I can have Siri do that on mine.
Yeah, I know. Well, I wasn't in actual.
Play classical jazz.
Right. But you actually started Siri.
And it's still listening to you.
Of course it is. Of course it is, because Siri is a smart woman.
And it opened my music list and brought up a classical. That brought classical, not classical jazz, which is interesting.
Yeah. Well, you do know that Susan Bennett, the woman who is the voice of Siri, follows me on Twitter.
Oh, nice.
Ooh.
She didn't know that was happening. She worked for she was contracted to Nuance, right, which is one of the audio companies, and they had her read, you know, nonsense words and phonemes basically to create all the different sounds. And then, you know, 2 years later, a friend of hers said, I just got the new iPhone, and I swear it's your voice. yep, it is.
Yep, it is.
Now, in Britain, the voice of the assistant is a well-known comedian, male. In Britain, the default voice is male.
Oh.
Which is interesting.
Hmm. I also discovered the other day that, you know who else follows me on Twitter?
Hmm.
Tay Zonde.
Chocolate Rain.
Exactly.
Ooh.
And you know who else follows me on Twitter? This is true. One Direction.
All of them?
Apparently all of them. I do not know why, and I'm amused by it, to say the most. Very nice, but whatever. I have to actually say this. I did not follow them back, nor did I follow them before that.
I haven't posted to Twitter in years.
Yeah.
I have 23 people following me. Wow.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I like people who don't actually. All right, let's get back to the phone. I don't know who this. Who's this?
Steve.
Keith.
Steve Smith.
Steve, where are you calling from, Steve?
Brighton, Penfield area.
Brighton, Penfield area. What's up?
Well, I got a Dell computer I'm running Windows 10 on, and I've got a question about screensavers.
Uh-huh.
When I'm done using the computer, I go to the, what I guess is formerly known as the Start button. I right-click on it, and then I go and I sign off. And what happens then there's a screensaver that comes up. And it seems to change like once every 6 months. And I'd like to try to put a screensaver that I would want on there. Do you know how to do that?
Right click on the desktop.
Yeah.
And there should be a personalize button to change the desktop picture and the screensaver.
Display. And there's they've got a lot of different screensaver.
Those are built in. You can buy additional programs.
And you can add your own. You can add your own photos. You could sit there and select a bunch of photos and have them cycle through photos.
Okay. All right. So and that'll work on that sign off screen.
No, that will be the screensaver when your computer is idle.
Yeah, when it's idle.
He's talking about when he's logged off, and it's just sitting there at the login screen.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Okay. Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Login screen is separate from the screensaver.
Right click on the desktop and.
No, that's the screensaver. The login screen is a different function. We have to find that.
Right. Right. Oh. So yeah, there are two. The one that we were. Originally telling you about is for when you're already logged in but idle.
You have to edit the registry to change the login screen.
No, there's one for lock screen as well. If you go into, here's what you need to do. Wow.
Hold on for this.
Windows 10. Hold on. Stay on the line. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you. And, of course, Steve from Brighton. And we're Soundbites at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we still have Steve from Brighton, Penfield area on the line. You still there, Steve?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so there's two screensavers. One is the one that goes on when the machine has been idle for a few minutes, but you're still logged in. And the other one is what happens at the lock screen or when you're logged out.
Right.
So what you do is you need to go into... the Windows settings, which you can get at by holding the Windows key down and pressing I.
For some reason.
I for settings.
Because S is already saved.
Right, S is already used. Yeah. Then you will see a number of choices, one of which is personalization. When you select personalization, you'll see a list of them. One of the things you can personalize is the lock screen, which is what we're talking about. So you click on lock screen, and under that, I think it's the third one down, you should see screensaver settings.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, you can set whatever screensaver you want from the ones that are already listed in Windows. And if you want, as Steve said, one of the things you can choose is the slideshow, and you can point it at a directory of your own pictures. And do it that way, and that will put whatever you want. Now, you do know that with the current crop of LCD screens, screensavers are much, much less necessary.
In terms of saving the screen.
Right.
But we can't get them to change the name to screen animations.
Right. Right. To eye candy, which is really all they are now, is just eye candy. They're still fun, and you can do what you want with them. I still have trouble. I'm on a Linux system, so I have something called Bouncing Cows, And I love my bouncing cows. I can't help it. But basically, yeah, you can set your personalization even on the lock screen. But you're now down, you know, you're down several levels into the rabbit hole.
Okay.
Apparently,
could you tell me again, like, what do I do to get into that on the screen or
sure,
on
hold
the keyboard?
Sure. From any Windows screen, from the desktop. You want to be on your desktop. You want to hold the Windows key down, and which is generally between Function and Alt on the lower left hand side there.
Yeah.
That Windows key plus the I key. I as in integrated. I don't know what the I stands for.
Okay.
That will bring up Windows settings, and one of the choices in there is personalization.
Personalization.
Under that, you have a number of choices, one of which is lock screen.
Mm-hmm.
Under that, you can choose screensaver settings, and now you finally get to pick your screensaver, how long before it comes on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, great. That helps me out.
And I've also posted those instructions on our webpage.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You guys have a great day.
You too. Yeah, we love our screensavers. Everybody does. People get bored by them now because they're all the same.
Yeah.
So what they really prefer is when they have the ability to put their own pictures up.
I just read a story, someone calling tech support, my computer's broke, it won't do nothing. And so, of course, tech people are trying to, it won't turn on, menus don't come down, No, it just sits there, it won't do nothing. And so, well, what's on the screen right now? Well, it's just a green field of grass, it won't do nothing. Yes, ma'am, that's the desktop picture.
Yep.
It's waiting for you to click on an icon. Well, my friend told me to get a computer because I could do my taxes on it. Yes, you can.
You can? But you do
you
your taxes.
Do your taxes on it.
The computer doesn't do the taxes itself.
They're great machines, but
that's right. You still have to do some of the work yourself. Although heaven knows I've gotten horribly, horribly lazy. I am always asking Google Home, things that I should have in my head, things that I should be able to do in my head. You know, can you convert these number of mm-hmm. centimeters to inches and et cetera,
yeah,
et cetera.
It's easier.
It's just easier. I've been boring everybody with the knowledge that I am getting a 3D printer. It won't be here till December because it's a Kickstarter. It was successful and they're on their way. They did one last year, so I trust the company. I'll get it in December. But I've been looking at stuff now and figuring out how big it is. So when somebody says, well, this is about a 4-inch thing, I'll say, Google, let's convert 4 inches to millimeters, because the bed size is 120 millimeters by 120 millimeters by 120 millimeters. So it's about a 4.7 or 4.8-inch cube.
Okay.
I have to convert things so far. Metric is not my tongue.
We have a 137 millimeter telescope.
Right.
And that sounds big, but it's 5 inches.
Right.
Which is pretty big, actually.
Which is pretty big. I've been bragging ever since the metric system came in.
Yeah. 140.
Right. Right. So I'm looking at, I haven't even got my 3D printer. I'm now looking at other printers that do 500 millimeters by 500 millimeters by 500, which is about 19 inches. And I'm thinking, whoa, that's the printer I really need. What am I going to do with it? I don't know. I don't even know what I'm going to do with the one I'm getting.
Mm-hmm. But still, no, that's not a bad investment for what you got are getting it for and the things that you can do with it.
Right. It's
you
know,
a toy.
It was a Kickstarter. It was $99.
Yeah.
Right. Plus $30 shipping. So $129. But, and of course, I could trick it out all the way up to $250.
Mm-hmm. Getting the accessories.
But so what? It's a hobby. I'll spend what I want on my hobbies. I'm retired now. Hobbies are what I do.
Mm-hmm. When you can.
Exactly.
Where is it? Did you see the 3D printed Escher box?
Oh, nice.
Let's see if I can find it again. The typical Escher box where it's an impossible cube, but then they rotate around it, and you can see how they printed an impossible box.
Right.
from the right angles.
Nice.
This is a different one than I'd seen before, where it crosses over on itself.
Right.
One of them I saw, the vertical bar actually is a curve that comes out over the front and back into the back to make the impossible box.
Right. But there's amazing things that you can do with these little toys, and I'm looking forward to doing all of them because why not? All right, let me read another, or I can tell you more about my 3D printer. It's a Kodama Obsidian. Mm-hmm. Never mind. We'll go to the news. We'll go back to the news. While Consumer Reports has previously given Microsoft Surface products good reviews for lab performance measures like battery life, speed, and display quality, it is now pulling its recommended rating from 4 Microsoft laptops due to reliability issues. Though surveys conducted over 90,000 laptops and tablets that Consumer Reports subscribers purchased between 2014 and early 2017, the company estimated that 25% of Microsoft laptop and tablet owners will experience problems like freezing, unexpected shutdowns, and unresponsive touchscreens by the end of the second year of ownership. The 4 laptops losing their ranks are the 128GB and 256GB versions of the Microsoft Surface laptop and the 128GB and 512GB versions of the Microsoft Surface Book. Consumer Reports also said it couldn't recommend any other Microsoft laptops or tablets because of the predicted reliability problems. In this report, the company said Microsoft's estimated breakage rate for its laptops and tablets was higher than most other brands. Consumer Reports editor Jerry Balinson told Reuters, "If you are very concerned about how long your products are going to last, it might be better for you to go with a brand that has a higher predicted reliability." He said that Apple products rank highest on reliability. They also cost the most because they use better components.
Mm-hmm.
Duh.
You can have it cheap or you can have it good. Pick one.
Right. Consumer Reports has pulled recommendations on other high-profile products in recent years. The Tesla Model S has had a roller coaster relationship with the publication, jumping from top rankings to losing its recommended rating in short succession. Apple's MacBook Pro also lost its Consumer Reports recommendation earlier this year due to irregularities in battery life across individual devices. Microsoft responded to the reports in a statement to Consumer Reports saying, "We don't believe these findings accurately reflect Surface owners' true experiences or capture the performance and reliability improvements made with every Surface generation." They also said that Consumer Reports was looking at old data. Well, Microsoft, that's what a long-term study means. Some of the data will be, wait for it, long-term. Rethinking your back-to-school purchases? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800. 7900415.
That was the same thing that happened to Apple when the rating for the MacBook got lowered. Apple complained, and Consumer Reports eventually came back and said, "Oh, we were in diagnostic debugging mode."
Right.
And that screwed the battery life up.
Right. So this is a longer
term.
Maybe
the same thing will happen with the Microsoft.
Well, maybe, but this is a longer term study, and what they're saying is that the older ones have
issues,
trouble. Yep. And that's a problem. People are starting to look at back-to-school stuff already. I remember school. I used to go there. I used to go there to work, actually.
Yeah.
People are starting to look at back-to-school stuff. And frankly, a lot of people are looking at Chromebooks because the Chromebook will be inexpensive and still do everything a student needs to do. Many schools are recommending Chromebooks.
If they break it or lose it, you're going to yell at them, you know,
right.
But it's only a couple $100s.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not
and they don't lose any
laptop.
Of their data.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing, though. It's a standard format. They don't have to worry. It's low maintenance for them because they don't have to worry about getting viruses, spyware, malware. And, they're not paying for an operating system.
Right.
Because it just comes with that, and the kids can do everything they need to do.
Yep.
They just pull up Google Docs. They can do up their essays and everything else, spreadsheets, presentations, the whole nine yards.
And because Google is giving schools so much free space and so much free stuff, a lot of schools are getting into it now. It's a very big deal. When you can buy a laptop that can do everything you need to do for school for less than $200, it won't be the fastest one, it won't be the best one, it won't be the sexiest one, but you can do it, you can use it. It's less than $200. How do you say no to that? It's ridiculous. So there's a lot of interest in low-cost, high-performing laptops right now. And it's hard to get lower than $200. $189 is the cheapest I've seen, the newer ones. It's cheap. It's tough to get lower than $189 for a quality laptop. And, of course, that's part of the problem. One of the things that we see is that people look at the $400 and $500 laptops and look at the $200 and $300 laptops and think, well, I'll buy that one. And then they're disappointed because it doesn't work as well. It doesn't work as fast. It doesn't have as much memory. It doesn't run as many things simultaneously. It's using marginal parts, which may burn out faster than higher quality parts. And so there, you know, in a way, that's penny wise, pound foolish. But with Chromebooks, it's a little bit different because in general, because it's a free operating system from Google, and because that free operating system does so much stuff, they can concentrate all their money in the hardware and offer a fairly decent product for a much lower price, and even a higher end product for a lower price. So that's why a lot of people are going with Chromebooks, and they're convenient, and they're secure, and blah 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 blah. So whereas you get some of the higher end machines, like from Microsoft or from Apple, and while the quality may be higher, they are also much more expensive.
And if you do need to buy a new one every couple of years, every year, instead of waiting 5 or 6 years with a regular laptop, you often still paid less.
Yes,
$200 every year.
Even if you bought one every year.
Yeah. There's your $1,000 laptop every 5 years.
Exactly right. It's exactly right. And at that, you're getting a newer, better, faster, yada, yada, yada every year.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, I get that. And it's difficult to convince people that a $300 laptop is not a $1,000 laptop. But when it comes to something like a Chromebook, they can see the quality is all being put into the hardware.
Yep.
And none of it goes into paying royalties or fees for software or any of that nonsense. So, or at least a lot less. And so we're seeing a lot of kids bringing Chromebooks to school. And also, again, you may have, a very high-end desktop that you spend an awful lot of money on. And then you buy a Chromebook to carry around with you, a cheap Chromebook. Mm-hmm. And anytime you're away, you're not going to be doing those high-end things anyway. And you do the low-end stuff on the Chromebook, although I've done pretty much anything I want to do, I can do on the Chromebook, anything I want to do. Some of it is not as convenient as others, but I can do it all. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And before we go back to the phones, let me just, for those of you who tuned in late
and
missed the wisdom of the first hour.
How dare you?
Ooh,
how
really?
How dare you first? But secondly, you should know two important things. First, it's the birthday of the IBM PC. It was originally announced on this date in 1981.
And we can play Happy Birthday because the Copyright Office has declared it to be out of copyright.
Yes, they have. So we could play the real Happy Birthday. But also, I have still not resolved my issue with Google and the security Tango. Google seems to think we're... they blocked us because they don't like what we serve off our site. I'm trying to explain to them that all we're doing is going to antivirus places. We're the good guys.
And you're serving their ads.
And I'm serving their ads. And if they found something in one of their ads, it's not my fault.
Yeah.
But we're having that discussion, and that is not resolved yet. Now back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Gates, New York. What's up, Mike?
I got a question about... Google Gmail.
Yeah.
On promotions, I turned it off because I was getting promotions. The one from the company I do business with every once in a while. And then it's, along with that, too, you couldn't get rid of them unless you take the first promotion off. In other words, they're locking in or something on the other guy's promotion or something.
Uh huh.
And I wanted to know if that happens again, what can I do about it? Because you can delete the one promotion that I like, and then they could be deleted too. But I like to know whether I can. I can't delete the other two promotions they have.
Right. Well, here's the issue, Mike. You can't prevent anybody from sending email to you. You can prevent yourself from receiving that email by adding them to what's called a blacklist, by blocking them from, you won't see their stuff anymore. When it comes, it goes right into the trash.
And are you using Gmail on a web browser or in a mail app?
Yeah, on the web browser.
Okay.
No, it's Gmail,
then
directly to the Gmail.
Okay, so Gmail on the website does have an option to block email addresses. Open the message that you want to block, and in the top right corner, you click the little down arrow and say block sender.
Okay, well.
The problem is that you almost never get mail from the same sender again, especially if it's junk mail. They will change the sender frequently to hide where it's coming from and to get past these blocks.
Oh, okay. Well, the thing is that when on the regular mail, you got the spot where you can check off and then delete it. But these promotions, they have the block, but it's you can't.
Yeah, if it's a legitimate promotional ad from a legitimate company, there will be an unsubscribe link at the bottom that should take you off their list.
Uh-huh.
However, the fake ads from illegitimate companies never hit that unsubscribe link because it will add you to more lists. And that's the problem with spam.
Right. And the big thing to do is you can block people by sender. And that can be better in the sense that, for example, well, I have actual correspondence that I deal with in Russia, so I can't block all of Russia. But maybe you could. Maybe you don't know anybody in Russia, so you could block anything coming from Russia or anything coming from China or anything coming from Japan or Korea or any of those places that do a lot of spamming. And that would help significantly cut down on any of your spam. But you really, Google is pretty good about getting rid of spam. But if you've signed up for a legitimate email list, as Steve said, it should have an unsubscribe link at the bottom. And by clicking on that, it should stop the email from coming permanently. If it doesn't, then you can complain to the FCC for all the good that'll do.
Well, okay. Thank you very much, Tim.
Yep, sir. Good luck.
Right.
There was just a telephone solicitor spammer that was just discovered recently in Miami, Florida. He was the one you've probably gotten phone calls about a timeshare you recently stayed at, which you didn't, and to sign you up for more timeshares. And the FCC found him by backtracing the phone calls and found that he was using a robocall machine that let him do a million calls a day. A million calls a day.
Yep.
And the FCC doesn't have any real power behind it, so they sent him a cease and desist letter with 30 days to respond, which lets him make 30 million more calls.
Right.
And then they'll turn it over to the Justice Department to actually go and arrest him.
Right. Maybe.
Maybe. But I have noticed in the last couple of weeks a huge surge in fake phone calls.
Oh, yeah.
So what we say happens is anytime one guy gets caught, 10 more rush in to fill the empty hole.
Yep.
And so every time there's someone gets caught and there's a drop in spam, there'll be a huge surge right after that.
Right. I have probably blocked 150 people in the last month on my phone.
Yep.
Oh, I'm constantly, you know, yep. sits there and says, I like it on my Google phone, though, because it'll come up. This is suspected spam.
Yep.
And yep. It just sits there and says, you want to block it? And I just hit, boop, and it blocks it for me.
And it's gone. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our pal Jason from Altoona, PA. What's up, Jason?
Hey, Nick. I was just checking out the thing. I actually downloaded Chrome to my system. I had to wipe it a couple of days ago just to check this out. If you go to Security Tango directly, Chrome will not block it. It won't even give you a warning.
Oh. Yeah, I found that too. But other people say they find it. They get maybe, hit. I don't know what happens.
Maybe if they're doing a search.
Yes, if you go through Google and do a search for it,
I just went to securitytango.com and got the dangerous site message. Maybe
I just punched it in and it didn't give it to me. That's why I went to the search engine.
I can say visit this site anyway. Maybe that puts me in a list. No, but it stays with a red dangerous triangle, even though I said let me in anyway.
Interesting, because I had the same thing. Security Tango is considered harmful for both securitytango.com and www.securitytango.com.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Who's your internet? Well, your service provider. What DNS are you using?
I don't know if I modified my router for Google's DNS or not.
It shouldn't matter what DNS it looks up the address from. When it gets there, your browser is looking on a known, what is it? An unknown known dangerous list.
Right.
Now here it gets funny, because I just put my cursor into the URL bar and hit enter to make it load it again. And the second time it came up, it did give me the red window.
Oh, how interesting.
But the first time it let it load up through without a problem.
There is a setting to turn off the dangerous warnings, so you never see that.
Yeah, you don't want
to
do that.
Which is a very bad thing to do, yeah.
I definitely wouldn't recommend that for your listeners, definitely not.
Right. Yeah, it's just an ongoing thing with Google. They'll get to it. We'll get to it. It's just not as fast as it could be. It just is what it is, I guess.
You have a Chromecast, right, Nick?
I do.
Chromecast does have a phone number for help with that. For some reason, they love to help people with their hardware, just not their software. I've done it before. I had to... really needed help with something, and I called the number and said, hey, I can't find anything else. Can you give me a number of somebody to call?
Oh, interesting.
It's very hard to find phone numbers for anybody anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I just went to the Chromecast website and found it. So the problem is people will Google, Chromecast help or Windows help, and the first five or six that come up are ads for usually fake tech support companies.
Right.
And you have to be really careful about finding the real,
Right.
Site.
And although Google is pretty good about saying this is an ad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You may not notice that little yellow ad thing.
It's just this little thing.
Yeah.
Now, on that note about the first few things that pull up, if you do a search for Security Tango as two separate words.
Uh-huh.
Be advised, it will not give you the your site.
Oh, interesting.
It gives you your Nick's site first, and then it goes to a Security Tango homepage on Facebook. I don't know if that's yours or somebody else's.
No, that's me. I haven't updated that much over the last, dozen years, I think.
Two. September 2015.
All right, I'll put something up there. I also get Google alerts for Security Tango, and my goodness, there are some spammers out there who apparently know that people are searching for Google for Security Tango. They're doing some sort of alerts for Security Tango, and they're putting that phrase in all kinds of ugly pages.
Well, you've done something right, because Bleeping Computer picked you up a couple of years ago.
Yep. I was very pleased to see that. It was very nice of them to do so. I'm trying to keep it relevant and clean and in good shape, but I got to deal with this Google thing.
Yeah. If you do find anything that the rest of us can help you out on, let us know so that we can. Because I had assumed with this page there'd be a thing where it says no, you've mistakenly flagged this as bad. I'm saying it's good, you know?
Right, right, right. No, I appreciate that, Jason. Thank you.
So, have a good weekend, guys.
You too. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank all of those of you who called in. I want to apologize to all of those of you to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week. We will be back next week indeed with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, and you'll see us in just another week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. And we will be back with sound bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.